accession number 31554, reel 4.
Harry Leach, reel 2, side 2. So you made your way up towards the Baltic coast,
yes,
after crossing the Rhine, and did you have much opposition?
No. What I now know from reading and meeting people, the objective was to try and cut off the Russians as far eastward as we could get. So any opposition from our leading units, leading battalion, they would just back off and find a way around and radio back, and they would be dealt with later. Mm. So we eventually landed up at Wismar on the Baltic coast.
Yes.
And there we were based in what had been a Dornier work, the Dornier work, where they built Dornier aircraft. Mm. We met the Russians there.
What did you think of the Russians?
Pardon?
What did you think of the Russians?
Not much. They were a fascinating sight because they were their forward troops just like we were. And to see some of these Russian female Amazons who were in the very, very front units, I would rather... shall we say, meet them, then have to deal with them.
We want to meet them on a dark night.
However, they'd done their job and we'd done ours. We weren't very many, probably 2 or 3 weeks up there.
Did you fraternise with them? Were you allowed to...
No.
No, because you see pictures of them, you know, everybody dancing and swigging vodka and...
Well, I've seen yeah, these, but no. We had very little to do with them. Mm. If we were on duty at the tripartite headquarters, then you would see them, but no, we have very, very little to do with them. Probably just as well.
So, what happened then for you?
We then were rushed back to Lüneburg airfield, where transport aircraft were waiting, again, the old Dakotas, and we were ferried back to England, back to Bulford camp, again to our own billets, and here we were sorted out by demob numbers. Each man had a demobilisation number. Mine was number 49, and that would, you were demobbed in rotation. I think that groups 45 and below were retained in the UK. It wasn't worth sending them abroad again because they would only have to be sent back. And our brigade, 5 para, was made up to what they call a brigade group strength, which is a reinforced brigade. And we went out to India. And
what did you think about that? Did you think it was all over for you? And
we did. We hoped, but it was not to be. And I went out on the airborne advance party, and we actually arrived in Kalyan camp outside Bombay about 6 hours before the seaborne party arrived. Having had an interesting journey, we were forced down on a little remote airstrip in the mountains in Afghanistan because the weather had broken in Karachi, to where we flew first. So we eventually got there and then spent a week on a train right up Lahore, Delhi, and then back down the other line to Bombay.
It was quite an experience.
Great experience, great fun. Then we eventually sailed from Bombay on the Zipper convoy to invade Singapore. I cannot remember the name of the troop ship we were on, but the other ship, there were only two of us, was a Polish ship, the Sobiecki, and we sailed, and I'm not too clear of what the plan was, but I gather we were doing a beach landing in Malaya and capturing Klang Airfield. Our aircraft were then going to be flown in, and we were to go and then do a drop at Johor Bahru on the Singapore Causeway. Fortunately for us, this never happened. The atomic bomb was dropped, and terrible though it was, it probably saved many hundreds of thousands of lives. So we finished up in Singapore, and I had a very nice job there. I was attached to our own airborne military police, and our billet was on Bras Basah in Singapore, in what was then and is now a convent school. It's still there. I showed it to my wife when we were in Singapore many years ago, and we used to go out. I was still a wireless operator with our airborne military police, somewhere about 11 p.m. and we used to go out on the all night out of bounds brothel patrol, this kind of thing. Very great fun indeed. Great fun. And from there I went back to join a brigade headquarters. We were then shipped out to Batavia. I went out on a tank landing craft. We landed in Batavia, and the purpose then was to protect the Dutch people who had been assembled in Batavia and Bandung and Semarang.
This was in Malaysia? In Malaysia, is it? Batan? Where you are, is which country?
In Java.
In Java?
Yes, we've come out to Java.
Yes.
We eventually moved down to Semarang, which is down the coast, and here we were again protecting the Dutch. And we were in a little hotel that had been outside Semarang, and I remember flying on the way to Australia, looking down from the pilot's cabin and seeing Semarang down there below. However, we were there quite a while protecting the Dutch. I then was very fortunate and made friends with a Dutch family who had all been in Japanese hands and all survived. I saw a lot of them after the war back home, but sadly I know they are all dead now. And I've lost touch with the grandchildren, so, you know, it's another chapter closed. From there, we went back to Malaya, and we were up country in Malaya.
What sort of date would this have been? What date would that have been?
This would be 1946. Mm-hmm. We moved back up country in Malaya to Seremban.
How did you cope with the conditions there, the heat and the insects and stuff?
You sweated.
Did you find it hard work, personally?
Yes, in a way. Because it was not quite so much the temperature as the very high humidity that really got you down. But you had to cope with it.
And was there much in the way of disease from insect bites? And
no, we had no... there must have been, but I fortunately had no problem, no problems at all. And then we went back up country in Malaya to Segamat, Seremban, and Port Dickson on the coast. And I well remember when I was on the advance party, we moved up to, I think it was Segamat, and we heard the train was coming up, bringing the main body of the brigade. So we heard this, it's a narrow gauge railway, and we heard this engine whistling, whistling and whistling. And as it came in sight from the station, we could see the Sikh driver and the fireman lying on the coal at the back. And the driver of the engine was Peter Port, one of our dispatch riders. So Porky was driving the engine, and another of our lads was stoking the boiler. So that was a bit of fun. We were there several months, really routine. The Malayan insurgency hadn't got going then. We were very fortunate. We got out in time. Now, one job I did have, I'm just trying to recall exactly where we were. Yes, we then sailed on a troop ship for Port Said, and from Port Said we went by train to rejoin 6th Airborne Division, who are now in Palestine. And our brigade was broken up, and I joined the Royal Signal Section attached to the 53rd Light Regiment Royal Artillery Airborne, which were 25-pounder guns. And I quite enjoyed it. It was quite a change being with the artillery. And I was actually Brigadier Faithful's personal wireless operator, another exceedingly fine gentleman and a very good officer. The job we had, the regiment had there, was to unload the Jewish illegal immigrant ships as they were brought in by the Royal Navy into Port Said. Into Haifa. And a very, very unpleasant job it was. You could smell the ships coming. The Navy brought them in hours before they arrived. The conditions on those little ships is virtually indescribable. They were crammed in, hundreds of them, into a little tiny ship. They got in there, and there they stayed till the ship either sank or arrived.
So were these people that were refugees from all over Europe that were looking for
These were Jewish people who had been conned by some of their own people into paying a lot of money for a passage to the land of milk and honey, Palestine. Mm. They were totally misinformed. What had been set up, and I don't know the full details, but what had been set up by agreement with the Jewish leaders was a rota system on which they could come into Palestine in turn. We unloaded these ships, which the Navy had brought in from picking them up out to sea. The smell was beyond description. You could smell them coming hours before they arrived, and conditions on board, again, were beyond description. I know because I went on board one with a medical officer and an orderly to go and help a lady who was having difficulty giving birth to a child. We were attacked when we were on the ship, but their own people drew the hotheads off. And I'm very happy to say that mother and baby did well. We took them off the ship and they went to hospital. I believe the people, the Jewish people, were absolutely conned that, you know, you go on these ships and you land in Palestine. Once the situation had been described to them by the interpreters, and the few hotheads who were resisting, in fact, one or two Navy chaps, I believe, were killed boarding these ships. Then things settled down and they were put on two troop ships in Haifa and taken to Cyprus, where they went into the camps, were sorted, went on the rota and eventually came to Palestine. That virtually is the end of my army career. I had only a few weeks to go. And there was a notice on the notice board, what they called DMOB courses in Cairo. So I thought, well, this will get me out of Palestine, for of course things were beginning to hot up then. and get me out of Palestine for a fortnight. So I put my name down and off I went to Cairo for this course.
What was your impression of the city?
Cairo, smelly, dirty, chaotic, and of course it's far worse now, I'm sure. But I enjoyed the fortnight.
And what did they teach you about the mob? What exactly did they teach you in that fortnight?
I did a course in French. Well, I didn't bother much. It was sort of getting out of Palestine. I was in the big camp, Mitokba barracks in Cairo. And then I suddenly heard this pounding of horses' hooves. And I happened to be down near the main gate. I think I was probably going out somewhere. And the camp regimental sergeant major's horse had bolted. So, having a lot to do with animals, I just turned, gathered my speed to match him, and grabbed his reins and gradually pulled this fellow to a halt. He was a beauty. So I took him back, because if he'd got out of the gate, which was only about another 20 or 30 yards, he'd have never seen that horse again. I took him back to the officers, the camp officers. I knew it was the Sergeant Major's horse. And he never even said thank you. So there we are. Then my number came up, because I was back in Palestine, and we were moved down to a transit camp near Port Said, where you went on a rota to go back home as and when berths were available on the troop ship. And we had a rather nice time there, enjoyed it. I was, by this time, I'd been promoted to corporal, and there were only about 6 airborne fellows in that camp at the time. And 5 of them were sergeants, and 1 of them was me. So these lads said, well, look, borrow one of our jackets, and so we can all go into town together, because we did no work in the camp. And so we used to go out into town, have a drink or two, and enjoy ourselves. From there, my number came up, and I sailed back home, eventually to Liverpool.
How long did that take?
A bit longer than it should have done, because as we sailed, the ship, the loudhailer system, said, unfortunately, the starboard engine is faulty. And so instead of going bum-bum-bum, bum-bum-bum, it was going bum-bum-bum, bum-bum-bum, but we got home to Liverpool.
So it was quite a relaxed cruise back, in effect, I suppose. Quite a relaxed cruise, yes.
Very nice.
Did you stay off at Durban and on the way?
No, you went straight through the Med.
Oh, yes, of course, you didn't need to then, did you?
Up through the Bay of Biscay and home.
Yeah.
I was sitting on the deck on this troop ship, and there was a young para lad sitting next to me. And I said to this lad, he was quite a bit younger than me, I said, you don't come from very far where I come from. So he said, no. He said, I come from Adswood, which is just outside Stockport. I said, well, I come from Cheadlehulme. Oh, he said, I used to work in Cheadlehulme. I thought, well, it's a big, big place now, but it was just a big village then. And he said, yes. He said, I was Mr. Broadbent, the fishmonger's errand boy. So I said, oh, yes. I said, my mum got fish from Mr. Broadbent. So he said, what's your name? So I said, Leach. He said, Swan Lane, through the little wicket gate, turn right, 2 houses, Mrs. Marsh, Mrs. Leach. I said, yeah, that's right, Mrs. Marsh was 31. He said, I used to bring fish to your mum.
Amazing coincidence again.
So I came home, I was demobilised, thank goodness, and went home, and just to cut the story short, went to work on a farm as a pupil. Before I went to university, I took a degree in agriculture and came back home. My mum and dad were living in North Wales then, and I went into partnership with the farm manager who had got what was called a purchasing tenancy of a farm near Holyhead in Anglesey. And we went into partnership and we farmed for 7 years and then exercised the option to buy the farm. In the meantime, we'd set up a rapidly growing caravan site and we sold the farm, as was our intention, and went our various ways. That farm now, it's not a big one, 200 acres in total with a lot of wild land, has now got something like 300 massive, what they call mobile homes on it, a shocking sight. There's one other small thing happened. One December night, which would be, I'm pretty certain, 1948, I'd been into Llangefni at a committee meeting of the young farmers, and I got back home and it was foggy, and my father said, have you been up to the farm? I said, no. So my partner's wife lived on the farm, we lived just a bit away. He said, well, you better go up, he said, because there's a ruddy big ship grazing in your fields. And the ship in the fog had come ashore on the edge of our farm. It's a long story. The Captain Adam Flint, well, as I say, he was asleep in his bunk. Captain Flint covered himself with lard. This was January. Jumped overboard and swam ashore to where my partner had gone down with a couple of tiller lamps to find out where his ship was, however, and that virtually, I then went into King's College, Newcastle, which is now part of Durham University, took a degree in agriculture, as I've already said, and after my partner and I sold up the farm, I went into commercial agriculture, a sort of sales advisory jobs, until I finally retired when I was 60 in 1964, and then did a job with an old friend of mine who had a little one-man business in agriculture, travelling all over the country helping him, and that was then I retired for good. Okay?
So looking back over your wartime career and the things that happened to you, do you think it made you a better person? What would you say effect it had on you over your life?
I think it made me grow up to a large extent, because my pre-war childhood life with my father, a very senior manager in the Midland Bank, I had had, I suppose, a very sheltered life. When you came to in the services, you had to grow up fast. I was extremely lucky. I had wonderful parents. I survived without any wounds or injuries. I'd lost a lot of my hearing, but that is a small price to pay. And I get a war disability pension for it anyway.
But you wouldn't have missed it for the world?
No, I wouldn't. When we were in Palestine, I was asked if I'd like to take a commission and stay in the army. It didn't really appeal to me. I was a damn good man at my job, I know that. But I don't think I would have been a very happy peacetime soldier. However, I went for an interview with the colonel, and he said he would approve my posting to an officer training unit. So I, at the, it used to be called WASBE, War Office Selection Board interview, they said they would recommend me and I would have to sign on for 12 months commission service. So I said, fine. I said, if I get my commission, I'll stay in. But what happens if, for some reason, I fail the officer cadet training, which can happen to anybody? Oh, well, they said you'd have to finish your 12 months and you'd come back to us in the division and you'd be a sergeant major immediately. I said, no, thank you. I'm going home. And that's the story.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed.
It's no problem.